Welcome to Escapes. I'm Erica Hemphill, and I am thrilled to invite you on this empowering journey. Join me as we explore the art of escaping self-doubt, the constraints of the 9-to-5 grind, the false realities that hold us back. We'll empower you to embrace entrepreneurship, motherhood, and co-working with your partner, and to boldly step into leadership roles that were once thought unattainable. Escapes is more than a podcast. It's a community of resilient women and men who are rewriting their stories, chasing their dreams, and smashing through glass ceilings. Together, we'll share stories of triumph, strategies for success, discuss our failures, and use insights from remarkable individuals who have paved their own paths to greatness. So join me, Erica Hemphill, as we unlock the doors to your unlimited potential. It's time to escape, empower, and embrace. Oh, and elevate. Your adventure begins now. Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of Escapes. I am so glad that you have decided to take your 1 hour a week to escape that 9-to-5 grind, to sit down and talk to me and listen to all these wonderful entrepreneurs that I am bringing you on our podcast. So today we have Miss Kim DuPlessence, who is not only a wonderful, wonderful friend of mine and mentor. I think we share the same personality. She's just a few years older than me, but I think she's still 30. And I just love her, and I love her story, and I can't wait for you guys to get to know her. She is a local entrepreneur here in Tangipahoa Parish. She is the owner and wonderful mother, and I can't wait for her to tell her story. So let's just dive in. Miss Kim, welcome. I am so glad you chose to talk to me today. So tell all our listeners just a little bit about yourself.
Well, I'm honored to for you to have me too. It's so exciting to be here. About myself, let's see. I started off in corporate America in the early 1990s. Okay. I worked at a Fortune 500 company for about 22 years. Mm-hmm. And then we were blessed and lucky enough to come into ownership of Tangy Meats. And so with those 22 years of working at Pepsi, I know that even though I look back on that time and it was hard, right? It took a lot of grit. I basically started at the bottom, right? Yeah. I was an administrative assistant to the HR manager in the early 90s. Okay. and then I transferred to the production facility in Reserve, Louisiana. I was in sales and then went to production. But, I was, I guess, in my mid-20s and, a lot of ambition during that time, right. Wanted to move up, worked really hard, and got promoted through the years. So I ended up being the warehouse manager the last few years of my employment there at Pepsi. And, of course, during that time,
Let me jump into the next thing. That was a higher role for a female at that time, I would think, right?
Yeah. I'm sorry. Oh, yeah.
That had its own struggles within itself, and we don't have to tamper into that. But guys that are listening, ladies that are listening, the 1990s, it was not as predominant for women to be in those higher managerial or supervisor roles,
right.
Especially in companies as large as Pepsi, I would assume.
Yeah. Even in the early 2000s, you didn't see it much. It probably wasn't until 2005 that we heard of the first female plant manager ever being put into place. So, there were only two females in management at that time. And it was me and my good friend, Patty Harrington, who ended up being promoted a few years later into the plant manager role herself. So we were one of the plants in Reserve, Louisiana, that actually had a female manager.
You're also giving me in class.
I know. It was exciting. But yeah, you're right. I mean, that, just finding the corporate ladder, there were three, manufacturing's three shifts. I was always on call. I often joke, we had those Motorola telephones.
Yes.
With the like walkie-talkie beep.
The beep, beep. Yeah, girl.
We all had those. And I had loading crews, second and third shift. And so, on call all the time. If we ran the weekends, you were always on call.
Right.
So just to, just to fight the battle of just being in that type of work environment and then being a woman on top of that, it had, had lots of different challenges because many men, just don't like to hear instructions from women or like being told what to do, you know, from a woman. Not all of them, but some of them.
Yeah, amen.
It was a lot. Yeah.
So now, since I deviated, I'm sorry, and I sometimes do that. So now tell me, okay, so we've been at Pepsi. We are ready to make a change. We've climbed the ladder. We've learned logistics, operations, human resource. Sure. Of course, we're not satisfied. We need more.
That's right.
Where are we at?
Always more, right?
Always more. Always
I don't know why, but we always seem to want more.
Yes.
You know, for a long time at Pepsi, I don't want to say that I was unhappy, because Pepsi gave me the skills that I needed to take on an entrepreneurship like I'm doing now. And so I'm so thankful for my time there at Pepsi, but it was hard. Missed a lot of my kids' stuff, right? Mm-hmm. Had to rely on a lot of the grandparents to help us out. You know, Ron worked shift work. So it was, you know, five of us going in different directions every day when we got home. And so the need to want to be out of such a rat race and into something more than that I could control my schedule for me and the kids, was something that I had prayed about for a really long time. Okay. Mm-hmm. But you know, when you're in, when you've had a career for so long in one place, it's hard to see any kind of path out of that. If that
I
makes
agree.
Any kind of, yeah. I mean, you know, you have health insurance, you know, that's a big one, you know,
the stability of the check that's coming every single.
I was going to say that, yeah, stability, the salary. I mean, you know, all that plays such a huge, huge role. In fact, I always joked with my kids that I wanted to quit Pepsi, but we would have to decide which kid didn't get fed.
You could have Pepsi product, but you weren't going to get dinner that
day. That's right. So, you know, that was our big joke, you know, when we always talked about me quitting. So my husband, Ron, is an avid outdoorsman, right? Yes. And so he loves to hunt. And so Tangy Meats, you know, we do wholesale pork processing to the grocery stores. But another little thing we do is deer processing, right? So he had gotten his deer processed here for like 15 years, right? And so during that time, he began to, you know, form a relationship with Mr. Joe Pellicchino and his wife, Shirley, you know, just over the years, seeing them and stuff.
And I'm saying yes, guys, because I know them. I'm from a small town, so I know the Pellicchinos very well.
Yes. So he formed a relationship with Joe. And so one day he told him, hey, if you ever think about selling, you know, let me know. It'd be a great fit for my wife.
Mm, you know, for my wife.
Yeah, right. Not for him.
Right.
Yeah, because at that point he was working shift work. He had, you know, he didn't think there was any way out of that for him either. But anyway, so like 7 years later, you know, he gets the phone call from Mr. Joe, and they're ready to get out. And so that's how it happened. Just Ron mentioning that, and him remembering that, and then 7 years later, he called Ron, and that's when we started the process of being able to buy it from them. So
many people, exactly. I think if we really like pull the onion back and we try to get to the root of it, from what I see is that entrepreneurs typically start out wanting that little bit more, a little bit more freedom. Mm-hmm. Than that regular 9-to-5. And look, everybody says 9-to-5. Everybody knows that's not true anymore. It's never a 9-to-5. But in the true aspect of it, like every entrepreneur that I have talked to, that I surround myself with, that I interview, it is that it always started with more freedom and flexibility.
Yeah.
But I also think that's almost a false reality, in my opinion, because I think there's, do you have the flexibility? Yes. And I think that you would answer yes to that question too.
Yes.
Because we can tailor our schedule how we need it to most days. Mm-hmm. But at the very beginning, I know for me, there was like very little freedom. There was 4 o'clock a.m. mornings all the way until midnight, 1 o'clock, trying to figure it out in the trenches. And lots of stressful days because of the financial part of it, that exactly what you were talking about. We kind of have a similar story on that I was the one that left my corporate job to start E&G Designs and Construction, but Garland was still working for United Site Services. And we did still have that stability. You know, we did still have that check coming in, but then it was still a nervous wreck for me because I was worried, like, what if this doesn't work? Like, there's so much that's going all in. And like you said, I think my corporate job elevated me to know that I could do it and wanted to jump into entrepreneurship. Sure. And it prepared me for a lot of things. But there's a lot of things that come with entrepreneurship in a small business that you just don't know. And we've talked about that. Yeah. So like, talk about like that acquisition part. Like, how did you know? Like, you don't have to go into any detail financially, but like, how did you know what to do? If somebody's listening right now and they want to acquire a business, what would be the one thing that you would tell them? The phone call comes. I want you to buy my business.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we can talk about a lot of first things I'd like people to know, right?
Well, let's give them like the top three. Brief synopsis, top three then.
Okay. So I would tell you, well, first of all, you know, unless you're able to be self-financed, then you have to go out looking for some money, right?
That's right. Either investments or have good credit.
Yeah. And that's it. I mean, that's the reality of it. If you can't get the financing to either buy or start your own business, then you're kind of dead in the water. A good credit record, right? We had to, when we went the SBA route when we bought Tangy Meats. And so with that, oh Lord, that is a whole different ball game. That's not a conventional loan. That's obviously a loan through the government from the Small Business Association. Mm-hmm. That probably took, I would probably say 3, 4, 5 times more work to apply for and to get than a normal conventional loan. But because we did SBA, then they require less of a down payment.
That's right. Right?
So even though we had to have a down payment, it wouldn't have been as much as it would have been, you know, from a conventional standpoint.
So you and I are a little bit different. So you went the SBA loan route and for ENG Designs and Construction, we went straight cash in. So like your startup and my startup was different. And that's what I tell people. Every business venture is different. How that starts up, how you financially have that set up is all different. And then obviously all the little nuances that come in after that. Okay. Mm-hmm. So financially sound, or you have to be able to apply.
Yeah. And then I would say you probably need to have a really good understanding of what entrepreneurship really is.
Okay. So with yours, Kim, did you know?
No. I had no clue. I thought I knew what it meant. Right. I had this perception of what it meant, but I didn't, I had no idea what it truly meant until, like you said, you're in the trenches. Yeah. Because, you know, when you work for other corporations, you're spending other corporations' money, right? On payroll and pallets and raw materials and you name it. But when you come into entrepreneurship, you're spending your money.
Right.
So it's a whole different ball game. Sorry. It's a whole different ball game. And it's a whole different set of stress, right? Yes.
Absolutely.
So even though at Pepsi, I was stressed about the workload or making sure people did what they needed to do. And yes, I had a budget to meet at Pepsi, a P&L budget to meet. All that was stressful. However, I did not have the cash flow part on top of that. You know,
Pepsi, actual CEO.
That's right.
Stressful part, right? Am I right in saying that? Like,
that's right.
I think I was prepared for, like you said, we found our niche, what we wanted to do, right? You knew you were going to buy a Tangy Meat Market. You knew what that logistically and operationally probably was going to look like because you had done that before.
Yeah.
I had only built my own personal house. That's it.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I was like, I'm going to jump into this. But I had no idea what that CEO stress level was going to look like when you start talking about workers' comp, general liability, property taxes, just taxes,
payroll,
employees, handbooks, processes, stuff like that. So I agree. Like, I totally agree with you. Number one, we'll go back through them. Number one was the financial portion of it, being ready to financially start up the business, whether that's via loan or cash, however you choose. Yeah. And then number two, knowing what you're getting into. And I think that might be a niche that's missing. It's like, where's the how-to book? We have dummies for classes, dummies for dummies. Where's the dummies for entrepreneurship? I was that dummy.
My number three point that I'm getting ready to make is do your research.
Yeah.
Learn whatever you can learn before you jump in. You know, because we jumped in and, you know, I did not know QuickBooks. I did not know how to do payroll. I did not know so many things. So Pepsi gave me whatever I needed from a manufacturing, logistic, raw material procurement standpoint, but I didn't have any of that, how to set your company up, you know, how to pay people, all that, right? So you're going to laugh, but I had the Dummies for QuickBooks book. Hey, and I taught myself how to do it.
Yes, ma'am.
I was thinking of, you know, and thank God I had a great CPA in Hammond to help me along the way.
Right.
But just know that, you know, there's a lot of stuff that goes into it, from, you know, your certificates to operate, you know, basic stuff from the state and the local parish government. I mean, just be prepared and study what you need to know beforehand. I mean, I know you can't know everything,
right?
But get a good handle on what it is that's getting ready to hit you in the face.
Right before you walk into the brick wall. I think I walked in a few times, walked out with a black eye, and I was like, oh, that's how we do that. You know, and just the hours of, I always say it now, I like to work smarter, not harder. I feel like that first year, I was like in quicksand, because every time I would feel like I was getting a little bit ahead, something else would come up, and then something else would come up. And I'm like, why didn't I know that? Why didn't I agree to that? And so I think, you know, you always hear that saying, 5 years. If you can make it 5 years, they pretty much say a mid to small business can make it.
Yeah.
I think that's true. Like my first 2 years were, the first year was definitely more like rough, just getting started. And then I think the second year was more setting some processes into play, knowing what I was going to have to do for renewals, for licenses and insurance and tax purposes, and leaning on my CPA to kind of guide me through those things, because I didn't know all the tax credits that we could utilize. You know, I think that that would be something you would know, but I mean, I knew standard ones, but there are so many out there for small businesses to utilize if you're utilizing them correctly.
Right.
And I think that it's a missed opportunity a lot. And we spend a lot of money on the front end. And I look back now and I'm like, wow, if I could tell myself 5 years ago, man, I'd have so much money in the bank.
Absolutely. I mean, no, what you're so right. And we talked about how our entrepreneurship looked different. I hit the ground running with a successful business already.
Right.
The Pelletinos had done a great job in building Tangy Meats up to what it, you know, to what it was with their customer base.
Right.
So I jumped into a business that already was just booming. Right. Right. But you know, my problem was I knew Pepsi, but I didn't know, or cola, but I didn't know meat. And so I had a whole nother skill set to learn when it came to, you know, the packing and processing of raw pork for, you know, for consumer consumption. So it was a lot. It was the same, but it was so different, if that makes any kind of sense.
So Ken, how long have y'all owned Tangy Meat Market right now?
It was 11 years this month.
Yeah.
11 years this month.
So for everybody that's listening, tell us a little bit about your work dynamic, because your daughters work with you, correct?
Well, one still does.
Okay.
So when, I guess in 2016 or so, we opened up the market here on Hoffman. And so the market was open and people could come in and buy box specials, you know, chicken, beef, you know, pork, you know, we smoked our own bacon, we made our own sausage. And so we opened up a retail market right here. The Pelletinos had a retail market as well. And so we knew that it could work right here. And so, you know, so we opened it up. And then 2 years later, I believe, we opened the location in downtown Hammond off of Railroad Avenue. So yeah, I had two locations going at the same time. All three of my daughters worked for me at one time. My eldest daughter, Alexis, worked for me full time. And then my daughters, Allison and Abigail, who were going to Southeastern College right there, worked part time. Yeah, that was fun.
That was fun. So we were mom and boss at the same time. And I'm sure that that just went, so smoothly and
right,
Cher. Yeah. Go ahead and say it so everybody can hear you.
It was so smooth. I mean, most days, and I'll just be honest with you, most days it was fabulous, you know.
But how did you, as a mom, because this is, look, the dynamic of my podcast is for sure to talk about entrepreneurship and the struggles and the highs and lows of that. But one thing that I want to touch on, especially when I talk to female CEO driven businesses, is what is that dynamic like? Like, how did you work with your girls? And then what were the struggles of turning that light switch off and then being their mom too?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there, I mean, when you work with your children, there is a comfort level there that you would not have with other employees.
That is true.
And so there is, you know, I often thought that I was probably stricter on them than I was on the regular employees, that, you know, not my people, because I wanted to make sure they were being held to
the Kim standard.
That's right. The Kim standard, right?
I can say that, y'all, because she's my friend, but she has really high standards like I do. I mean, like, I think they might not even be on a chart. I think they're exceeding
level. Right. Well, and then you have to also make sure that when you're employing your family, that you're not biased. You don't want to appear to be biased.
That's
because
right.
You want to make sure that you're fair across the board with all employees, whether or not they're your children or your family or not.
That's
and
right.
So, you know, so it is a tight rope to walk when you have your family employed for you. Right.
Yeah.
And so, but you know, for the most part, my girls are great. Right.
Yeah.
I mean, they've got good work ethics. And so
they have a good mom and a dad.
Well, we try. Right. But I mean, they have good work ethics, and I really can't recall any major problems that I had working with my girls, you know, which is a blessing, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Other than just, you know, your basic training, because you know as well as I do, you know, we have our skill set because of all the work we've done already, right? Yeah. All these years of stuff that we've done, the skills that we've learned and everything, you know, these are brand new little people just in the workforce, right?
Oh, absolutely.
They don't know anything about anything. And so you're having to navigate them through just learning how to be in the workforce.
Right.
Yeah. And how to
agree to that. I have a younger gentleman that's my project manager.
Yes.
And love him to death. And he has been wonderful for us.
Uh-huh.
But, he came to us and we took him on with zero experience.
Yes.
And so when you do that, there's a lot more training that goes into that employee than if you hire an employee that has experience, which that's a whole nother topic for a podcast, whether you hire somebody with a degree and zero experience or you hire them with 5 years of experience.
Yes.
I think there's pros and cons to both, but I can relate to you on that. There's a lot of training time that goes in whenever you're having to bring someone in where you've had many years of experience working in corporate America and coming over and then setting also your new expectation for the new business, right?
That's right. That's
right. And that's where we were. Garland was coming in from corporate America after being in corporate America for 15 years. So he had corporate America experience. And then I had smaller business experience working for an oil and gas company. And then here was Kevin that we hired that had zero.
Zero.
So we were trying to tailor him to both sides of the coin. We want you to have small business experience because that's our community, right? Our community-driven referrals and our clientele. But then we had all these processes that we were setting into place. And I'm sure that the girls had that experience too with you.
Yeah. And it's frustrating too, because that kind of skill set does not happen overnight.
No.
You know what I'm saying? And
we're
so
going on year three with
That's right. And so, you know, for me personally, as their mother and then their boss, you know, I brought, and I'm not patting myself on the back, but you know, after 22 years, there is a lot you bring to the table. I mean, you know, there's not probably anything I had not gone through at that point, you know.
Knock on wood. We're gonna not wanna have don't call me next week and be like, you are not gonna believe what happened.
Nothing new happened.
Right, gotcha.
Right. But there's not much that we have not experienced, you know, at this stage of the game. You know, the crazy never seems to surprise me anymore, right? And so when you're dealing with someone with zero work experience, zero experience, even with life, because you know they're young.
That's right.
there's layer upon layer upon layer of things that you're trying to change. I mean, or to train or impart to them. And again, it's not an overnight, you know, you can't just download their brains overnight, right? Open it up and download the hard drive. It can take months and years. You know, for Lexi, she's been working for me now for probably 7 or 8 years. And so she's been now involved in the manufacturing. And guess what? She can make some decisions, right?
Yeah.
She can, you know, she can decide on the workflow. She can troubleshoot, because, you know, small businesses, that's really what it's about. It's about how to fix things when they're broken.
Right.
And they're going to be broken every day.
Something.
Or every other day.
Something. Right?
And so the critical skill of problem solving really is up there. I mean, like,
I say that it's like my number two or three on my list for sure, because that's what we preach at our staff meetings.
Yeah.
Come to me with solutions and not problems. And I will tell you if that solution is, does it fit our core values and does it fix the actual problem?
That's right.
And if we can answer those questions, then we've done well. There's going to be problems every day. Something's going to come up. There's little bitty fires all over the place.
We just don't want
a wildfire.
If we can
contain them with problem solving and then solutions, then we're good to go.
Yeah.
And I think that, or what I have seen is that new generation really struggles with problem solving.
Oh, they do. Know?
They want to pick up that phone and be like, and say, hey, Miss Erica, yada, 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 or Mr. Garland, yada, yada, yada. And they want that immediate answer, right?
Or they want to just pass the buck.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm. And so we really push back on that, at least in our office, to say, no, this is within the job description and the job duties. We've trained, we put this into process. Now I need you to tell me how you would fix this.
That's right.
Tell me how you would handle this. And then if we don't see that it works, then we retract that and we tell them what to do. But then that's their learning time to then on the next issue, they have the confidence and the accountability. I think those two go hand in hand.
I agree.
Because whenever you make them accountable, they feel like they have a little skin in the game. Oh, wow. Well, I made that decision. So now I have to stand for it if we go to the staff meeting and something wasn't right.
Yeah.
And so I definitely agree with you there. That one is high priority on my list for sure.
And that's probably one of my, I mean, if I had to probably pinpoint one of my best skills, it's probably problem solving and the ability to, when my staff comes to me, how we're going to fix this, not how am I going to fix this?
Right.
How are we going to fix this? I had a plant manager at Pepsi. His name was Jack Pezel. And he was the plant manager that promoted me into the warehouse manager position. And if you brought him a problem, you knew that you better have three solutions when you brought him a problem. Because if not, he did not want to hear it. Because you were putting it on his plate and you were taking it off yours, right? And so by bringing the solutions to him, you were able to actively engage and discuss what these solutions could do and how the outcomes would be. And then we would decide on one of three. But yeah,
it
never went to him unless you had solutions already ready to go. And so
write that one down. I mean, we try to say that, but I like the three, because typically they'll bring me a solution and maybe it's a great one and it works out. Mm-hmm. But sometimes a solution is not sufficient.
Not well thought out.
It might be 50%, but it's not to that off the chart expectation. Right?
No.
But I like the three, because then that makes them really think outside of the box too, on what that would look like. I really like that. I think I'm going to implement. I love
that. Because you know, one, the simplest solution out of the three may be the deal. Maybe the answer, but it may be the most complex solution out of the three. That's the answer.
Right.
So, you know, you're able to look at it from different angles. And I mean, and he was right, you know, it got me to thinking how I could fix it before I even approached the subject with him, you know? So I thought, I thought that was a really good training moment that he did for me. Right.
Right.
So now I can use it, but I didn't make that up. I got it from him.
Hey, that's okay. Look, we learn from each other, right?
Oh my gosh.
That's a huge thing.
Yeah.
so I'll give, I think that Kim is the best interview person. She knows this. She has sat in on group interviews at my office for employees that I have interviewed. And y'all, she's so organized. She comes, she knows her questions. She knows what she's doing. And I want to know, how do you continue to educate yourself? Like, how do you continue to make sure that Kim DuPlessis is the best CEO of her company and for her staff?
Yeah, well, I'm going to have to plug Southwestern Coaching in here today. I don't know if you've ever heard of them.
I haven't. But no, tell me about that, then I'm going to give you my plug.
Okay. Yeah, because, you know, again, you know, if you're the top person CEO, who's training you?
Who's holding me accountable?
Who's holding me accountable? Nobody but myself. And so some days that looks great, right?
Right.
Some days doesn't look so great. So... Mm-hmm. Just recently, I have hired a personal coach, and it's through, through Southwestern Coaching, and her name is Jackie. And she is about vision. She is about not only vision, but then what are the steps to the vision, right? Mm-hmm. Because one of the things that I read the other day was you can either say, one day I will do these things, right? Or one day, or you can say day one. So it's about your shift of perspective. And so I just hired me a personal coach.
I love it. So, yeah. Okay, I'm going to give you, so how long have you been with your coach?
I have been with Jackie for maybe 3 months now. Well,
first of all, we go to breakfast and lunch. So I don't want anybody that's listening. This is not like, oh, I'm not going to talk to Kim for 6 months from now.
Right.
I think we have a breakfast date for next week, if I'm not mistaken. But what I was going to say is I cannot wait to see what you tell me about your coaching experience 6 months from now or a year from now, because I have had a coach. I did a pod coaching for 6 months. It was my coach and two other businesses and myself.
Yeah.
We were in the same sphere, but we were all in different arenas and we were obviously in different states.
Yeah.
And I didn't know if I really bought into all the coaching before then.
Yeah.
But I had been told by multiple business entrepreneurs, Erica, you're at this level. Like, you need to have coaching. You need to have someone holding you accountable. Cause I was at that place. Like you just said, who's holding me accountable?
Yeah. Nobody.
Marlon? No.
Right.
I love him, but no.
That doesn't count.
Right. That doesn't count. But who was holding me accountable and also pushing me to set even higher expectations to elevate and to scale. And so, like I said, it's been almost 9 months now. I started with the pod coaching through Winrate Consulting and I absolutely fell in love. And like Garland still wasn't 100% in at that point. He was like, oh my gosh, I can't believe we're doing this. But then what I was bringing back to the table, back to our staff meetings, really taking our business model and tailoring that in processes that I think I'm really organized. You know me, I think I'm very productive driven. And just seeing different things from a different perspective for other businesses and just being in the room with them, right?
Yeah.
And so then it came time, my contract was up. I only had signed 6 months and I just knew I wasn't finished. But I also felt like in the pods, and I gave Mike and them this feedback at the end of the 6 months, my business was definitely more advanced than some of them that were in there, but it was really cool for me to sit in there because I was like, oh wait, I sucked at that. Like, don't do that.
Right.
You did that. Let me tell you what I did that worked for me. So I even got a little taste of that coaching myself because my coach allowed me to be the guinea pig for them. Right. And so I was able to see where I fell short and where I could help new entrepreneurs really succeed. And so I love that aspect of it. So then of course I wanted more and I wanted that one-on-one. So this year we signed on for one-on-one coaching. And I think that any business owner that is at that 1 million, 2 million and above, I highly suggest getting a coach. and it's not necessarily like selling a coaching program. I would love for you to, anyone to go through WinRate. I think that they're raw. Right. They're good. They're, they are so my type, a type, like Erica, get your shit together. And I don't need somebody to butter me up with butterflies and any of that. And my coach is definitely not that. But then when I have successful wins, they are my biggest cheerleader. Mm-hmm. And so when I talk to other entrepreneurs, do you know that every single one of them have said that they had coaches? What does that tell you?
I know.
It is a necessity, I think.
Yeah. Well, and I had got complacent at Tangy Meats. You know, you kind of get bored 10 years in, you know, you're doing the same thing over and over and over. You know, I just needed someone to help me, you know, get a fresh start, so to speak, you know, a fresh mindset. What does the next 2 or 3 years look like? What does, you know, what do the next 5 years look like? You know, how do I transition myself out of Tangy Meats when I go to retire?
Right.
I mean, I'm 54 and that's a real thing for me.
You're 30.
Oh, that's right. I'm 30. I feel like I'm 30 though.
That's good.
But you know, so the transitioning, out of me out, or even part-time, you know, what does that look like? How do you do that?
Isn't it crazy how they actually make you start envisioning? That was like the first thing that Kenny, my coach was telling me. And then when I really sat down for my first one-on-one, it was really scary because I hadn't sat down and done 1 year goals or 5 year goals because I had crushed all of them within the 5 year mark. And the first thing that Sam told me was, well, how do you know where you're going if you haven't wrote anything down?
That's right.
The reason why you accomplished all your goals before is because they were there. They were visionary. You saw them every day. You manifested these things. What are you moving towards? Like, and I couldn't answer anything. Mm-hmm. And Garland really couldn't answer anything. And so just to have someone, like you said, recenter me, re-talk about the things that I already knew, but in a different aspect and perspective of, at that point, they really didn't know that much about my business except for what I was sharing, you know, through the pod, but just higher level thinking of your mindset, manifesting what you want. Where do you see yourself? Where are you building Intangible Parish is not my only goal.
Right. Well, they take you out of the trenches and they make you look at it from 10,000
higher level. That's right.
Yeah. And so that's one of the main things that coaching has done for me. They've kind of pulled me back from it. Right.
Right.
Where do you want to be? Let's write some goals down. And I had a hard time with that.
I did too.
When I was doing all of those, because Southwestern makes you do the personality.
I was
like freaking out over all that. I'm like, this personality thing's gonna come back and these people are gonna say, yep, she's crazy.
No, I told Mike, and then whenever I did that out on the very bottom of the notes, I said, you can decline me as a client if I'm too crazy. I understand really.
Because
we had a phone call interview, like you had to go through this application process
Make
sure that they wanted to work with you too and make sure it was a good fit. And I had followed Mike before I had joined, because like I said, I wasn't bought in yet. Him and I, and then one of his other coaches, Nate Griffin, we had like a sit down, a phone call. And I think it was like right before COVID or right when COVID happened. And obviously Garland was just transferring in from his corporate job, coming to work full time with ENG. And I was really nervous about that. And I was like, I don't think I'm ready for that jump yet. Like, let me fix my life. Yeah. And me and my partner are about to work together full time, which we had not done in a long time. Like, let's make sure the business is actually going to work before I start paying for some coaching.
That's how I felt too. That's why Ron didn't come over.
Yeah.
You know, because to put both of your income in one business, it's quite the step to make.
I can say that first year of stress for me, and look, I say this to my husband probably more now than I ever did. Mm-hmm. He was the breadwinner for so long. He was amazing. I went back to school and he supported our family and our son, and I never once had to blink. And I never once thought back then what that stress did to him. And not in a bad way, because he wanted me to be able to do that. Sure. But just the internal stress of, oh my goodness, we have this lifestyle and a baby and a house and all these things. And he was the only check. That coin got flipped when he came and started working ENG full time. And I can remember so many nights in bed just praying to God, like, show me the way, because if this fails, it's going to be on me. Yeah. On me. And look, I never once think that my business is going to fail. I grind too hard, and I envision a lot, but just that what if, because at this point, Garland and I's bills were definitely way more than what they were back in 2008 when I went back to school. We had two babies now, two babies in private school and one in travel ball, one in competitive dance. And I can just remember at night, the winding clock just saying, okay, how many houses do we have to have? How much revenue do we have to have? How much profit has to come in for these things to keep our lifestyle the same, you know? And so I do, I think that stress level was huge for me. And I commend you and Ron for talking about it and it not being what y'all wanted to do right now.
Well, cause you know, he quit shift work, right?
You told me that.
At the beginning of this year. And so we really thought he would come to T&G Meats. But there's a lot of uncertainty going on right now, you know, in the world. And so even though I try not to be rooted in fear, because fear is bad, you know, it could just pick you up, shake you around and throw you down. Right. I mean, fear, if you let it grasp you, can be just, paralyzing. So I don't try to go there much about the what ifs, but I think any business owner has to, on some level, prepare for the what ifs.
That's right.
You know, I mean, you have to. And so when we made the decision for Ron to go work for my sister and her kids' company, instead of coming here, it was a relief. Like, I mean, I wanted him here, even though I had no idea how we were going to work together without me killing him. I love you, baby. But you know, that's just how it is.
He would have made it. Garland's made it 3 years. He would have made it. You would have drank more wine, but he would have made it.
I'm sure he'd want to kill me too, right? And so when we made that decision for him to, you know, to work for my sister, they had an opening for him. It took a lot of pressure off, right?
Yeah.
Because now we've diversified. We don't have all of our eggs in one basket. Right. And so for me, I just thought for now, it was the thing to do. And it was a hard decision because we had planned this whole time for him to come here to work with me.
And we talked about that a lot, you know.
Oh, all the time.
You and I have a very similar personality. And I think that Ron and Garland have a very similar personality. And so I think there were definite struggles with Garland and I coming to work together. And look, if you want to hear all about those, join us on our Power Couple podcast. We have that going on too. He'll tell you the truth. I'm not the easiest person to work with. And we had to relearn each other as business partners, husband and wife, because there are two different individuals there. I am his loving, supportive, respective wife. But when we get to the office, there's a different demeanor that's held there. And so I 100% agree. Garland and I agreed that we were going to have to diversify too, in case something ever happened. Garland still kept his CDL in case the housing market completely flopped and we had no jobs and whatever we were going to do, he was going to be able to go get a job. Like, that's, we had to make sure he was going to be able to go get a job.
That's smart.
And so I think that was just a good move for you and Ron at the time. I think if I talk to you, 3, 4, 5 years from now, either you will be retired, I would think, or I bet Ron's with you working at some capacity, because I think that y'all have talked about that. And I love that. I love that aspect about you guys, that y'all are both headstrong and y'all are looking towards the future, and y'all are great role models for people to look at in the business world, because there were some hard decisions ahead of
you. And I know you and Garland feel the same way. We want to do a generational thing for our children, right?
Right.
It's not just about what T&G Meats looks like right now for Ron and I. We want it to be there for the kids for generational wealth. And so, you know, it's a long-term picture when it comes to, well, what does that look like? You know, when does Ron come here? How do we transition to let the kids run it? That kind of stuff. So,
I love that. And you're right. It is a generational thing for me, but you know, my fear is with that. And you're right. I try not to focus in on fear. Girl, what if I do all this and my kids are like, I'm not building houses.
Right.
Oh, that's not my thing, Mom.
It's a thing. I know.
What if
well,
we do
and
that?
Because, you know, we have five kids. And so only one of them, Alexis, was interested in, you know, in really working with me full time or doing this type of business full time. You know, the other ones have completely different, you know, career paths. And so, you know, so what does that look like? What if Lexi in 5 years decides she doesn't want to come here anymore? She wants to do something else. There needs to be a contingency plan there too.
No, so, and I was just about to say that's going to loop me right back into the coaching because we had never thought about that. And look, I'll be completely transparent with you and listeners. At one point before coaching, Garland and I did not have a will. We did not have any 401k set up except for what was set up whenever I was at the oil and gas company and when he was with United. So we were putting everything into the business. Well, now we have assets. We have money that's set aside. We have kids that we have to think about later on, generational wealth, what happens after that. It was time to sit down with a financial planner. Like we needed to know what to do because we didn't know what to do. And what does that contingency look like if my kids don't want to do this?
That's right.
You know, who inherits this or does it get sold outright? What does that look like? And again, those were things that my coach just brought to the forefront that I wasn't thinking about, you know?
Well, because again, you're in the trenches just trying to run the
business. Day, the day to day, every day.
That's right.
So the last thing that I want to touch on is just as through time, and obviously you were a mother in corporate America and as an entrepreneur. And obviously when you came into Tangie Meat Market, your children were a little bit older, but what did that look like during that time frame, being a mother and climbing that corporate ladder and then turning into CEO? I know for myself, when I was at the oil and gas company, I had so much guilt because I wasn't around. And then when it came time and I became the owner and CEO of ENG, there was a relief there. But then the guilt came in on how do I split my time? How do I really navigate that schedule so that work gets so much of me and then my kids get so much of me? So how did that look as the kids were growing up?
Yeah, I mean, that's
especially with Ron doing shift work. I'm sure that played a factor too.
I often look back, Erica, and I'm not sure how I did all of it.
That's okay.
Yeah,
now I'm in that season.
Yeah, Well, you're where I was. I mean, I look back now, and I have no idea how I navigated such a demanding job and five kids and a husband working shift work. I can tell you how I did it. I had a lot of help. Yeah. You know, I could not have made it without my parents or Ron's parents. You know, helping us chauffeur people around. But I try not to look back and regret much because, you know, that does you no good.
Right.
But the regrets that I have with working a corporate job like that is I did miss a lot of my kids' stuff, right? And there was a lot of guilt there because of it. But, you know, it's so funny because, all my kids are grown now. And we'll talk about my time at Pepsi and how, you know, I missed a lot of what they, you know, I couldn't go on school field trips or, you know, I mean, I could barely go to teacher conferences, you know, right. I mean, and back in my early career, you know, this was really before they gave women way more time off, you know, I mean, I had two personal days a year and I could not.
Girl, they wouldn't know what to do if I walked in the office and said, hey, y'all, we're going to two personal days.
Can you imagine two personal days a year and I could not use them for a sick child? So like if Lexi was sick and I had to take her to the doctor, I went without pay. It had to be a personal day for me, like a sick, you know, yeah. And I had to bring an excuse. So that was way early on in my career. And so I had to rely a lot on my parents, you know, but I mean, they worked too. There was lots of days early on in my career that I had to miss work. They docked your paycheck, you know, all that kind of stuff. But then, you know, but after a few years, they would give some more benefits, some more time off, some more vacation. So it wasn't that bad toward the end. But I did not have a typical mom job, you know, Did not have a typical mom job. And so anyway, we'll talk about it now, my Pepsi days. And my kids will tell me, bless their little hearts, that they had the best childhood growing up and they have no idea what I'm talking about.
So, okay. So that brings me to exactly what my son says, because I had a lot of guilt with Kipton because I wasn't able to. I was working corporate America at the oil and gas company and I couldn't drive from Covington to Ponchatoula for a little Turkey Day celebration that was only 30 minutes and then have to drive all the way back. So, you know, bless their soul, my grandparents would go because my mom and dad are very young. So they were still working at so they couldn't go. So Gigi and Pop, the great grandparents, they were going and picking them up 2 or 3 days. The kids were going to their house in the afternoon. This is before Aubrey was born. So I felt so guilty. I can remember telling Garland, like, I love my job. And that was part of it, is that I absolutely loved what I was doing. I loved my boss, Laura. I still love her. If you read my bio on my website, I mentioned my boss and the oil and gas company because I love them. They really made me the leader that I am today. They are truly, they will hold a special place in my heart forever. Mm-hmm. But I remember, and they were very good about saying, Erica, you can go. Erica, you can, you know, do what you need to do. Yeah. But I felt guilty that I wasn't at work.
Exactly.
So I felt guilty that I wasn't at work. Then I felt guilty that I wasn't with my child. Right. So when it came time for Aubrey, I just told them, I was like, I'm going to need to work from home. And look, they loved me. They allowed me to do that for a full year after Aubrey was born. And we did a full transition to hiring someone else and doing the training. Yeah. And I will never forget that. But I know that they molded me, because now when I went to go hire someone, she was a female to work inside the office and she was a single mom and she had a baby. And I was very understanding for that. It molded me to make sure that I knew that if you needed time off to go to that little one's little thing at school on whatever day, and look, as a small business, I can get away with this. Corporate America, sorry, you're just going to have your days and it is what it is. But this is the benefit of working for a small company, right? Yeah. I had the flexibility to tell my employees, you go to that and you can make the time up, or you can take a dock and pay, or you can use your half a day. However you want to use that, you can do that. But I always wanted to keep that open perspective of that. I wanted females to realize that you can be a mom and not feel guilty and work in a thriving industry and hold positions that require a lot from you. You can do it all. And what made me realize that is that one day we were sitting on the couch and I was talking to Kipton and I said something about, I was showing him pictures and he said, well, mom, you're not in that picture. Gigi is. I said, well, I wasn't there. I was working. And he said, I didn't even know.
They
didn't
don't
even know.
He carries so much guilt around
when we're outside playing baseball or at the baseball field or when we went to Disney as a family. Like, those are what he didn't remember that I didn't make 30 minutes of a day, or, you know, he didn't remember that for Trick or Treat Village at school, Gigi went. He was just happy that his Gigi was there.
That's right.
You know, I'm the one that felt guilty. So you're right. I have let that part of it go, but I can tell you that there are so many women out there that feel guilty that they're not as involved in their kids' activities. And I think that for me, and you can correct me if it's different for you, I think it's more about being there when it really counts. Sure. Evenings, weekends. Sure. And maybe looking for that job that's a little bit more flexible, but not climbing the ladder for yourself.
Well, and giving yourself grace. That's something that I really had to learn.
I love you because you tell me that all the time when I tell you things. When I tell you things, you say, give yourself grace.
Yeah, we have to, because, you know, we carry around all this junk that we were never meant to carry around.
Yeah.
You know, Jesus never meant for us to carry all this junk around, and this guilt and this regret and, you know, all the would haves and should haves and or if I would haves, you know, it does nothing but exhaust us mentally. Okay. What that does is we're busy living in the past, and then we can't appreciate the future or the current thing. The present, right. And so one of the great things, I'll often think, you know, my sacrifices have now let Alexis be with Noah for every single thing he's got at school.
Isn't that amazing? Because that's what I look
at. It is.
Everybody asks, Garland and I, or even clients, we are very strict about what our hours are at our office.
Yeah.
Very strict.
It should be that way.
We open at 9. That doesn't mean that we get there at 9. Garland and I typically get to the office at 7:30, but no earlier than that because our kids have to be dropped off at 7:20 and him or I drop them off every morning.
That's right.
And then we're at the office and then the office opens at 9. We are due diligence for business all day until 3 o'clock.
That's right.
Our office closes at 3 o'clock. And we'll have people say, well, do y'all not take afternoon appointments? We absolutely do, as long as you schedule them. And that's now we have set dates that we do that. So we only schedule evening appointments on this day and on this day. And you want to know why? Because Kipton has baseball practice until 8 o'clock. Arbor has dance until 6:45. So us being in a meeting, they don't even know that we're gone. They don't even know that we're still working. But we are tentative to our schedule. And we are very vigilant on when we take evening meetings and stuff, because the whole reason, and we will wrap this right back to the very beginning, was about the freedom and the flexibility of schedule. And I think that there should be a lot more of that with business owners. I see sometimes on Facebook where people put up questions like, do you think that you need to be accessible all the time? Look, I'm the first person. No.
I agree.
I don't care if you're in sales. I don't care if you're in real estate. Yeah. I don't care. No. Because if you are available to people every single day, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, when is it your time? When is it your mental time? When is it your time for your faith? When is it your time for your kids? When is it your time for your spouse? You cannot be accessible. And I think our society has made us feel like we have to be accessible. Uh-huh. And just because I wanted freedom 7 years ago, when I allow my schedule to do that, I just lost every ounce of my freedom. And I think there's a poised way to say it, obviously. Yeah. But obviously, as long as we keep our boundaries in place and we're transparent with those boundaries, I think that people will start to appreciate that. Because then when you put it into perspective that I totally understand that you worked until 5:30 today. But my day started at 5:30 this morning.
That's right. That's right.
I can be available to you on this day, but not just any day. Yeah. I think that we keep our freedom that we were naturally driven to towards entrepreneurship.
Well, and I think that people sometimes look at their schedules and their planners as almost a chain around their neck. But for me, I look at my schedule as freedom because I made that schedule, right? I plan my work time, like you said, my family time, my worship time, my vacation time, whatever that looks like. I mean, building your schedule is really building your own freedom.
And so in that same point, a lot of people look at their planner when it's full and they look at it as success.
Yes.
When I look at it and it is jam packed every single day from morning till night. And look, this was me for a long time. That is exhausting.
Yes.
And what good am I? I'm not even good to the next client if I'm that exhausted. My mindset's not right. My creativity is not there. My snippiness turns into my kids. And I didn't want to be that person anymore because I had to sit back again with my coach and my goals and my vision.
Yes.
And I wanted that schedule to be something that wasn't a ball and chain to me, but was more of a freedom release of, look, I can schedule, I can still get all these clients in and I can still get all these things done. And when I really started doing that, truth be told, I don't work on Fridays anymore. Yeah. I haven't worked on a Friday in 6 months unless I choose to do that because we're closing out something.
That's right. That's right.
If you would have asked me that 3 years ago when I opened up my planner, I can't do that. Do you see this planner? I can't do that.
Yeah, right.
I can't do that. But then when I really analyzed that and looked at my schedule, there were times that I had no freedom. And so I think that anybody that's going into the entrepreneur role, I think my nugget for today would be continue chasing what you started. Mm-hmm. Like, what did you start it for? What is your why? Why do you keep doing it? Yeah. And then base everything else around that. And if it doesn't fit into that why, it doesn't need to be there.
I agree.
Yeah, sure.
I like that. Yeah.
You like that?
I did.
What's your last little nugget for everybody today?
Give yourself grace.
I knew you were going to say that.
And if you don't like your, if you don't like your calendar, then start making some steps to change it.
Erase.
Just don't wish it's going to change. Start mapping out how you can change it.
I love that. I love that, my friend. I love that you've been here with me today. You are my calming voice. You are my friend, my mentor, and the one that always tells me to show myself some grace. And
That's
I would not know what to do without you. I love our breakfast talks. I love our lunch talks. And I am so glad that you joined my podcast today. And I hope that everybody that listen can listen and find some piece of empowerment and how to elevate and how to give themselves a little bit of grace today and
I love
tomorrow.
It. Thanks so much. I had a great time talking
Miss
to you.
Miss Kim, tell everybody where they can find you.
We are on Hoffman Road in Hammond, Louisiana. We still offer some retail stuff out the front if you're looking for some sausage, or you know, if you need some case ordering for parties or stuff, we can still do that, those kinds of things for you. So 15337 West Hoffman in Hammond.
And telephone number?
985-386-3104.
Again, everybody, I hope that you will get in contact with Miss Kim. Check her out. Do you have a Facebook page anymore?
Yeah, it's just the wholesale Facebook page.
It's just the wholesale.
But it's still there. It's still there. Yeah.
Well, if y'all have any questions about wholesale or if you have any questions about what she has to offer you, please do not hesitate to reach out and call and talk to her and let her know that you heard her on our podcast today. So guys, thank you so much for escaping with us for 1 hour this week and letting you know today that the statement is show yourself some grace.
I love it. Bye.
Thank you for joining us on this exhilarating episode of Escapes. We hope that you've been inspired, empowered, and ready to embark on your own journey. The power to escape and redefine is within you. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe, rate, and review Escapes to help us reach more incredible women and men like you. You can also follow me on Facebook at ENG Designs and Construction and Instagram at Build with ENG. Stay tuned for more amazing stories, insights, and strategies in our upcoming episodes. Together, we'll rewrite the scripts of our unknown possibilities. Until next time, this is Erica Hemphill from Escapes. Your adventure continues, and we can't wait to be a part of it. Until next time, continue to embrace, empower, and elevate.